This is Using the Whole Whale, a podcast that brings you stories of data and technology in the nonprofit world. This is George Weiner, your host and the chief whaler of WholeWhale.com. Thank you for joining us. Well, I'm incredibly excited today because I get to talk about metrics. And any day I can talk about metrics, well, that there's a happy day. Welcome to episode 20. We are talking with Kiva, actually, and their CTO, Sam Minkwich. I've known him for a while. I've loved Kiva for even longer. If you don't know Kiva, please be sure after listening to this to go check them out. They're offering an incredible platform that provides microloans to underdeveloped countries and people that are, you know, entrepreneurs there, as well as small grants expanding into the U.S. and other regions. All right, let's go jump into this interview. By the way, I had to fly to California for this one, so please enjoy.
Everyone's so caught up with getting hated on all the time. This one's for the love.
I'm here today at the Kiva offices, and I'm here with their brilliant CTO, Sam. Actually, can you just tell us what you do here?
Sure. My name's Sam Minkwich. I'm the CTO of Kiva.org. I've been with Kiva for over 7 years now, and I'm responsible for the overall technology plan, lead the engineering and product development team here at Kiva, and sort of being one of the original technology member teams, and also the institutional memory of how everything works and why did we exactly decide to build it this way 5 years ago now that it's broken.
So I'm here, something breaks, I'm like, oh, let's go to the internal repository, which is Sam. But that is incredible to me because I understand a bit about Kiva, but could you actually tell us what does Kiva do in a nutshell, and you know, how does that relate to technology?
Sure. So Kiva is an online marketplace where anyone with as little as $25 can come online, find an entrepreneur or borrower in the developing world that they want to help support in their business, contribute online, and help see that business get the funding that it needs and might not otherwise have access to. And also, not only do you get your $25 back most of the time, but you also get to hear from the borrower and hear updates about the progress of their business.
Pretty incredible stuff, and you know, you're coming up on 10 years of being around. You were in the game before it was cool, as it was the most cool, and now as people are, you know, taking more of a critical eye on it. I'm curious, what are the metrics overall that Kiva's looking at as, you know, indicators of success?
Yeah, so you know, Kiva first and foremost sees itself as a social enterprise. What we're trying to do is give access to capital to people that don't have it normally, and the best way to measure that is just how many borrowers, how many people are getting access to that capital, and how much money are we able to put in their hands on any given basis. So we just recently crossed the lifetime threshold of $600 million in loans in our 10-year history, and we're on pace for about $150 million of loans to be made in 2014. And so that is millions of lenders that have helped fund loans for millions of borrowers all around the world. Right now, we work with about over 400 different partners in 72 countries. I might have gotten those numbers wrong, so you can check out our about page to see what the up-to-date stats are. But it's a huge network, and it's a ton of people, and it's something where I think we take it for granted today at Kiva, the scale at which we're able to operate. But there's over 10,000 loans get funded on the site every month, and when you take that to some of the other crowdfunding or international development programs, it's just an order of magnitude more than what they're able to do.
Yeah, so you're just quietly becoming more and more awesome every single year, giving away millions of dollars, and I think we can't fathom this.
It's a loan, George, not a donation.
Oh, thank you for the correction. It is a loan, probably a misconception.
It's something that is a wrinkle in a model that's a little different from how international development had done in the past. And I think that's part of what is appealing to the lenders, is that they realize it's a hand up, not necessarily a handout. But then it can also, from a technology perspective, the fact that not only do we have to take your money today, but then hopefully give it back to you in 6 months or a year's time when the loan is repaid. Add some more complications and can make the whole thing a lot more complex than it might otherwise be.
Yeah, and I'm glad you kind of like jumped on that, because donation, nonprofit, just kind of like accidentally falls out of your mouth, even though I'm definitely familiar in it. Maybe this would help a bit more. Let's say like I'm in Kenya and like in Kibera and I need a bicycle. I'm an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
And I'm like, this bike is expensive, but if I could get this bike, I could then run my business of selling stuff to tourists.
Yeah, so the vast majority of Kiva loans are actually come through what we call a field partner. So it's a local organization that would be based there in Nairobi, based in Kenya. And you would go to that organization and say, hey, I've got this great idea for business. I wanna get a loan. And then that organization would be the one that would help to post your information up on the Kiva website. And in turn, when the loan was funded and the money dispersed, they'd be the ones that would help get the cash in your hands and then collect the repayments when they come back as well.
So you're telling me you want $25 of my money put through an online website that's just going to go to someone random on the ground in, say, Kibera, and like you think that person's actually going to pay me back?
I need the caveat that past performance is no guarantee of future performance, but our current repayment rate to date is over 98% of all loans that are funded get repaid in full.
So that's like almost better than that is better than, let's say, the U.S. housing market if I were making loans out there.
U.S. housing market has a lot more volatility, but it's definitely something where the cost of the loan might be a lot less than that was $25. So we actually have some of our most prolific lenders will actually put a whole lot of money into Kiva and leave it sitting there, knowing that they might not be making the same financial return, but knowing that they're making a lot larger kind of social return on those funds. And that while it's not guaranteed that you'll have all of your capital preserved, the historical performance is pretty encouraging for that.
And it's about 2% that the return usually falls around?
The default rate is between 1% and 2% right now. So the amount that you would lose on average.
I think it's easy to overlook the fact that they're like, oh yeah, all we have to do is just create a simple website where someone can find a great loan opportunity and just press a little button. You just probably like throw it through PayPal. Really simple site, right?
Yeah, I think a lot of the, because not only do we have to collect the money from lenders up front, but then also disperse it out to borrowers and then have money come back the other way around, a lot of that complexity comes from the last mile of dispersing the funds. And the other piece of it is that because of the small size of our loans, and because of the large number of lenders that might contribute to any one loan, we have a very small average transaction size. So while you might see, hey, there are $600 million in loans, from a financial services perspective, that might not seem like that large of a volume. But when the individual transactions get broken into $25 pieces, and your repayments might get broken into $2 or $3 chunks at a time, and then that gets spread across 40, 50, 100 lenders that have all contributed to the same loans, we end up with a whole lot of really small transactions. And so from a data perspective, we have a lot of really small transactions.
It seems like a website you don't want to crash.
And it's pretty important that we get all the pennies into the right spot. You definitely don't want to crash, and part of the that trust of giving us your $25 to send to some place other than the world is that you also want to have confidence that we're not going to lose your money and that it's getting to where it's supposed to go, and that we have some processes and tools and frankly people in place to make sure that's what's happening.
This one's for the love. For the love, y'all. But not you, you stay there. Forever treated me with the same care. What it felt to me, so rare. Where I'd rather be, nowhere.
We don't choke, we find air, we get low, we climb stairs. Had to find you, like a high flare. I never die down, I swear. It seems to be around when I'm a Kennedy.
This is a pretty complex system, obviously. I'm, you know, joking around with the whole PayPal button, obviously. You know, you've built a platform over these, like, you know, past 10 years with Kiva, and I'm curious, you know, what does your team look like, and what is your role as, like, CTO of managing that team?
So the technology team here at Kiva, there's a component. It's sort of broken down by product areas and who our different constituents are. So probably the piece of Kiva that you're most familiar with is our lender-facing website, the place where folks can come and contribute $25 to a borrower all around the world. But we also have a portal for the field partners, so those 400-plus organizations that need to share with us the information for each loan, process information every month about who's repaid, how much, which of those money should go back to lenders or not, as well as to send updates out to the lenders about what's going on with this borrower, that borrower. And then we have a whole suite of tools to internally manage all of the sort of operational, you know, all those sort of admin functionality. And, you know, I mentioned a little bit of the scale, 10,000 plus loans a month, $10 plus million of loans moving around every month. You know, literally millions of dollars both being sent around the world as well as coming back in to be redistributed. It's important that those internal tools aren't just sort of an afterthought, but almost become a first-class problem. There's things that you want that work well, that they're efficient for the team. Frankly, it's part of our organizational sustainability and scalability that with a small-ish number of staff, we're able to handle a lot of loans, a lot of partnerships, and a lot of money moving around. Kiva has about roughly 100 full-time staff working mostly out of the San Francisco headquarters today.
And 30% of those are just technology. They're kind of under your...
Yeah, about a third is on the technology side.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned the sort of like staff efficiency, and we were talking before, you've got the, seems like four-ish buckets of your metrics, the acquisition metrics of like new users, transactor, depositors. You've got the retention of how do we keep people returning as investors, and efficiency, like each staff member, if they were twice as efficient, you need half the staff, and that's obviously a metric of how well they're managing partners. And then impact of, you know, what do these loans actually matter? That's a lot of metrics, and obviously they definitely matter, but I'm curious of like when you kind of close the door and it's your sprint meeting and you're like, here are the metrics that I care about for the technology team. How are you quantifying that and then using that to manage your team?
At the macro level, these sets of metrics help not just the engineering team and the technology team prioritize their work and figure out what to work on next, but it's really across the board. And that we've realized over the last few years that this Kiva is a complex model. There's a lot of interdependencies here. And it makes sense for the different departments and groups within Kiva to try to focus on the same sorts of problems at the same time. For example, if one of our big goals here is to increase the efficiency, we may want to be able to support more partners, more loan volume for each employee. That's something that's not just for the engineering team to go in and make the product more efficient, but it can be symbiotic with, say, the partnerships groups going in, looking at their policies and seeing which things they can simplify. You know, is this review process that we put in place a couple of years ago, is it serving the need that it's intended to do? And so because of the interdependencies, you know, the metrics help us focus in on what areas we should work on. And then each group or department can also come up with some of their what of what, how they want to try to improve that metric. And in the past, when we were doing it in a little more isolation, we led to some really disjointed things where we might go in and rebuild some tool. And then 3 months later, the user of that tool is like, well, we're not actually going to use that anymore. Can you build us this new one instead? And so we want to try to catch those things up front and really be working with each other rather than just prioritizing things in a silo.
And so that misdirected development, let's say, because of the feature spec, whatever communication issues come up, by having the metric lead the conversation, lead the feature or product, do you find that that helps focus your team and create and future-proof development?
You know, I wouldn't say that's certainly not future-proof. Like, that's a future-proofing is a hard thing. But I would say that it helps to helps to target the conversation on the why and not just on the what. So going in, you know, lots of people have ideas about how you can make the product or the software better. Let's build this, let's build that, let's make the buttons blue, no, let's make them yellow.
Definitely.
Rather than, all right, you fall into the yellow camp around here.
No, I fall into camp contrast, by the way. Whatever has the highest contrast thing around.
Yellow and green just don't necessarily go together quite as well.
Contrast.
Why, not what. And so rather than getting hung up on yellow versus green or yellow versus orange or, you know, contrast versus aesthetically complementary, let's start by really zeroing in on why we're going to make this change. Is it to increase conversion? Is it to, you know, have less staff time involved in working on this thing? Is it to make the customer happier? Because at the end of the day, sometimes things that you do, you know, it's great when you can find the win-win-win where the feature change is both, you know, easy to build, makes your staff happier, and the end customer likes it as well. But sometimes, you know, those are not always in alignment. Sometimes you do something that's easier for you, even though it's neutral to maybe a little worse for the user. Or maybe you pick the thing that's easier, you know, easier to build, but won't be quite as much of an efficiency gain. So by the metric helps you zero in and give you a common language to evaluate the worthiness or the fitness of the, you know, the feature, the project that you're considering. Mm-hmm. And I just asking that simple question of, all right, after, you know, you've been in the room for an hour, you're kicking around lots of different ideas about what is you could build to make this page or this aspect of the site better, to have that step back of, all right, we've got, you know, three best ideas up there. Let's refresh ourselves about why we're actually we're going to spend, you know, precious staff time on this right now. And sometimes that can be really illuminating. Like, yeah, three would be cool, but that's not going to drive conversion at all. That's going to, you know, do something else along the way. Like, if the thing that we agreed at a high level we need to fix is conversion this year, then we should be doing one or two. A bottle is a trouble, a rock will provide the base. The feet will keep us stomping, a barking upon the gates. No harmonies in talking with enemies of the state. No pausing of the tape, just repeating one's fate.
We're talking about some of these new features, and I know you did a very impressive thing as, like, you applied a tactic of a freemium model to keep it, like, try before you buy kind of. Mm-hmm. Kind of thing. Can you talk to us about how that feature rollout worked and what some of the results from it were?
From the early days, the way that Kiva worked is that you'd come on the site, and in order to make a loan, you had to put in at least $25. And while we had plenty of people that were willing to do that, a few years back when we sort of looked at our conversion funnel, you know, that having that high of a price point was definitely an impediment. And something that was popular at the time and still popular is the freemium model. Who can say no to free? And so we spent, I think this is going to be 2012, although I might be proved wrong, is we spent 2012 building what we called a free trial model. One of our very generous board members, Reid Hoffman, funded 40,000 free trials for a total of $1 million. And the idea there is that you come on the site, you would get to pick out an individual borrower that would receive that $25, but you wouldn't actually have to put your own money in. And so, but you would still, you'd get all the updates from that borrower throughout the life cycle of the loan. You would still get to have all of the Kiva experience except having to pull out your credit card right at the beginning. And the hope was that those folks, you know, having had the Kiva experience would become lenders in the future that were willing and able to spend their own money. And, you know, like a lot of freemium models, it's not 100% of those folks that will convert, but, you know, some subset of those. So we had some early success with that particular free trial program, and it encouraged us to find other folks willing to put in money and do more campaigns in the future. But one of the, I guess, counterintuitive, it's one of the things that we saw in looking at the data was that those first couple campaigns had a conversion rate that was about twice what the succeeding campaigns would end up having. And so what in the beginning looked as like a really lucrative, high ROI kind of program where we could continue to attract more people that would put in deposits into the Kiva platform and make more loans of their own based on this freemium model. Later years, the conversion rates were about half as much, and the ROI went from being like a slam dunk, yeah, we should do it, to almost more like a, oh, this probably isn't worth it, actually. And so I guess both the, what's the takeaway there? So definitely, if we hadn't looked at the data after the fact, we wouldn't actually see what the ROI was. It's prompted us to move in slightly different directions ongoing. Like we aren't promoting the freemium model quite as much anymore, and instead we're trying to look after things that will either get people to become depositors right up front, or also look at finding things that are even in between that, somewhere between free and the $25 price point, and how can we get people over that hump.
Yeah, so just to like come back on this, the great thing here is, of your buckets of metrics that you're looking at, this comes into the acquisition model. You're looking at new accounts created, meaning I've created the account, I've gone into the system, but I haven't really done any sort of giving yet. A transactor who is, in your words, have one of those 40,000 people, say, that have donated the money. No, sorry, invested the money.
Yeah, invested.
So you're trying to get those people into depositors, right? People that have put their own cash up.
Yeah.
So 15% was the...
So a new transactor in our parlance is somebody who's made a loan with not their money.
Yeah.
And we're trying to convert them into people, into what we call a depositor, someone who's made a loan with their own money.
And you're getting 15% thereabouts when you first did this project, but since you kept measuring it, that dropped in half to a point where you're like, we're not connecting in terms of getting transactor to deposit.
Those early campaigns were doing about twice as well as the latter campaigns. And I think this is one thing that actually made it difficult for us is that the caveat is that we would see that conversion rate sort of eventually over the lifetime of the campaign. The typical loan on Kiva these days is about a year and a half long. And so we couldn't really, you're most likely to turn from a transactor to depositor once your first loan is fully repaid. And so we kind of have to wait a year or two to see what the final conversion rate might be for a campaign. And that's a really long cycle time. And it really, frankly, it sort of prolonged how long it took us to notice that the latter campaigns were not performing as well as the early campaigns.
Yeah, but at least you were measuring. You didn't just one time look at it. Mm-hmm. This works now. It's always going to work. Let's keep throwing Hail Marys and expect the defense not to adjust.
Mm-hmm. And it's prompted us to move subsequent managed lenders, encouraging them to put their dollars into a different kind of lending experience.
Yeah, and that's really smart to say, hey, Reid Hoffman, you are brilliant. That was a great first step, but if you're going to give us another $1 million, by the way, you hear this, Reid? Hopefully, if you're listening, another $1 million. We can inform you a smarter way to do that. So another feature you're kind of dancing around a little bit, you're talking about this managed...
I think, frankly, it's not just a, hey, Reid, we can show you this information, but something that we've seen from funders and lenders at that level is that they sort of expect and or demand that sort of information today. To go in and they want to see in a quantifiable way what's the total amount of their impact. Because Kiva is a platform with a lot of data on it and a lot of very precise actions, it's a frankly, it's the cost of entry for us to be able to come back and give them very robust aggregate information about all of the activity that their dollars have helped to fund. And so, it's not really an optional and a nice to have. It's a must have that the funders are asking for.
Yeah, and I don't think, you know, Reed is an outlier in that. You know, I definitely see that across the board. But you're talking about impact. And so before we go into any other cases here, that's another one of your metrics. So let's say I donate $25, you know, to five different people. Do you then come back to me and say, nice job, George, your impact is $125? Or how are you getting to that next level?
Yeah, that's, I think that the short answer is basically yes. You know, we present back your impact as having made $125 in loans to five different borrowers, and here is a set of their stories that you have helped to be a part of. I think one of the, trying to blend those things together in a resolve them back down to one number is one of the super quantify sort of way. It's a challenge that development and international development overall has had over the years. Is how much better is someone's life because of whatever it might be? At its heart, Kiva is about connecting people. It's about stories. It's about narratives. It's about community. And so we've sort of left our impact summation, if you will, at that level of like, these are the actions you've taken. You know, these are all the loans that have happened because of you. These are all the people's lives that have been affected in a positive way because of you. And haven't really editorialized much beyond that. Now, if you're funding one of these larger campaigns, then what can get interesting there is both seeing the scope and the diversity, across this many countries, these kinds of loans. So you start seeing patterns there in ways that on an individual, five loan person, you might not see there. And you can also see some of the network effects. Yeah, the 40,000 people that joined Kiva because of you, because of your birthday campaign. We just launched this birthday feature a few weeks ago. They've come in, and those people have made this many loans and this many dollars have added to the system, and it's touched this many borrowers' lives. And so we try to, you want to use your data and you want to present that in the best way possible. We've also don't want to dehumanize the data. We don't want to take the people, and we don't want to take the individuality out of that as well. Or try to, compare people or individual circumstances, across the world in ways that don't necessarily make sense. It's like I said in the start, we work with partners in 70 plus countries. Huge range of different circumstances in which these loans are being made. Huge range of different circumstances in which the quality of life or sort of the kinds of benefit that they would expect to get. And part of the big umbrella of Kiva is that we try to have lots of different opportunities out there available so that you as a lender can find the kind of borrower, the kind of loan that speaks the most compelling to you. And every Kiva lender can have their sort of their own definition of what the best kind of loan is. But we don't think it's Kiva's place as the platform to say that, this kind of loan is better than that kind of loan.
Now hopefully you see why I was so excited to speak with Kiva and Sam over there. Brilliant use of metrics here, because it's not just freaking numbers on a wall. It drives me nuts when it's like, over 1 billion burgers served, 1, million loans, well, actually for them, 600 million loans provided. They are looking at fine-tuning their marketing and how they, you saw, should we continue this freemium model in earnest, or are we getting diminishing returns to the conversions we hope to see of getting new lenders out there? So hopefully you can look at how you're dealing with your own metrics and making them actionable, holding yourself, your marketing, your communications against those measures and saying, how do we create more change at a faster rate. All right, so this was one of two series of Talking with Kiva, so there's still more to come if you like what you're hearing. You can skip ahead to the next episode. As always, resources will be available at wholewhale.com/podcast. Thanks for joining us. This has been Using the Whole Whale. For more resources on today's show, please visit wholewhale.com/podcast and consider following us on Twitter @wholewhale. And thanks for joining us.